to the Internet Advisor. Once again, your hosts, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Rudell.
Hey guys, it's good to be back with you for hour number two, where we attempt to tackle the questions that people have, and we're going to be talking about that. But this week as well, I'd like to reintroduce our gang of folks who are here to help answer your questions. Mr. Gary Baker, talking to us from down in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. How you doing, Gary?
Well, I'm ready to talk about that rascally rabbit.
Yes, we want to talk about the bad wabbit. And then also with us, this time behind the board, engineering for us, Mr. Ed Rudell. Excellent job, Ed.
Yeah, always great to be here, Foster. Thank you.
He's learning the bells and the whistles and the buttons.
I got to watch Kel's mistakes last week, so this is good.
And
stumbles.
Yeah, I'll get to make ours, mine soon enough as well. Kel Carson, thanks so much here.
He had it right the first time. But you know something? It's too bad it's not like in a regular studio where we have some glass to separate us.
From yeah.
But it's good. It's good to be able just to reach out and touch him whenever we have to. So that works out really, really well. And hopefully one day, Mr. Baker, if he ever comes back up north again, he'll remember to bring that 10.5 pounds of red snapper with him as well.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, sometime around May, you know, when it gets warm again.
I think he's really enjoying this.
I think he loves it.
Are you coming back home for back up here north for Thanksgiving?
No, I'm actually going to have the family down here.
So they're going to
come down, and we're going to just hop over across the Gulf Stream to the Bahamas.
Do you put Christmas tree lights up in the palm trees?
You know, I haven't seen it yet, but, you know, who knows? I think maybe Santa's going to give up his sleigh and maybe use a skidoo down here.
One question I have.
Personal watercraft.
Now, have you got Halloween lights on craft down there?
Because, I don't have any on mine, and I haven't seen any.
Okay,
I
because it's so weird up here, the Halloween decorations.
Oh, yeah.
And now they're selling the orange LEDs, and the people are decorating their houses with orange and lights. And, you know, come on, you know?
It's, I think, become one of the biggest holidays in terms of decorations.
Well, it's probably
even before Christmas.
Well, it makes sense with the lights because it's so dark in Michigan this time of year.
Yes, it is.
See, I've always celebrated Halloween with lights. I've got a full set of black lights I put up all the time. They look great at night. People will drive by and go like, wow, that house looks really dark. And go, yeah, black lights really work. Better get some orange ones to go with it.
Hey, guys, we've been teasing this topic. Let's talk a little bit more about it in depth. And that is about the bad rabbit that appeared in Europe this week.
So bad rabbit was another ransomware where basically the people that became infected were their files on their computer were encrypted, and how they got to become infected was really strange. This was mostly in Russia, in that area in the Ukraine, and how they became infected is the multimedia or the web media sites were had poisoned links, if you will.
Well, that was one way. They were also burying it in Flash. Well, not in Flash. What they would say is that you needed the Flash player.
Oh, yeah, yes.
You click on it, and then they would give you the poison, and you'd be sick.
You know, that you're right. That's what it was. So the links on the media websites were instructing the users that they needed to update their Adobe Flash player. But, yeah, their sites were poisoned.
And to avoid getting that type of infection like that with not just Flash, but any software package that's legitimate, if you go to a site and it says to you, you need Flash, click here, don't click there. I mean, even if it's a legitimate site that you've trusted for a long time, don't click there.
Yes.
What you want to do is that if you need an update to Adobe Flash, go to Adobe's website, because they make Flash, and download the update from the Adobe website.
So how long, I lost my train of thought. So how much longer are we going to have to deal with Adobe? I mean, I thought that was on its way out, if you will.
Adobe is never going to go away, as far as I know. It's going to constantly be around because it's a good product. The problem is that it's just that is very open. It's got a lot of holes in it, and people can take advantage of using it for malicious-type situations. But as far as I know, Adobe is going to continue to embrace that software. They have no plans to stop using it, so therefore they'll keep working with it from now on.
You had a conspiracy theory, Ed, that we were talking about before, terms of where this was showing up in Russia.
Well, it was showing up in the media sites, and if some of these media sites were not saying something favorable about the Russian government or about Putin, I mean, wouldn't it make sense that they would poison those sites so the people that actually listen or go to those sites would then possibly become infected? So I'm thinking maybe some of the media would be involved with that. The Russians basically poisoned the media site. That's all. I mean, it's a possibility.
Now, I don't know if we've heard anything about cleaning up this. Have you heard, Cal, whether there have been patches and things like that that have been set up in order to take care of the people who have been infected by this?
All the research that I've done so far says the patches have not been done for completely yet. It all depends on what variant of that particular ransomware it is. Some of the old Microsoft patches will take care of it.
But this
particular one has some differences to it, and therefore they have not wrote patches for it. The biggest thing is, unfortunately, if you become encrypted, then you're stuck. And you shouldn't pay the ransom if you don't have to. And I wouldn't pay ransom at all because, after all, if someone's going to go through the trouble of taking away from you something like that, how can you trust them to pay that ransom back to them and they're going to actually give you what you want? You're better off not dealing with those type of people, and hopefully you can survive without that data.
Yeah, well, and it comes down to basically, I mean, the old mantra that you have repeated many, many times and that we do as well, back up, get that done, and then update.
And in the case of this particular situation with backup, you back up to your external device or you back up to the cloud. And then if you do it on an external device, what you're going to want to do is attach it from your computer. Because if you have it attached to your computer, when they infect your machine, they're going to encrypt every hard drive that's on that machine.
That's a very good point. All right.
So after you back up, take it off the machine so that it can't be infected. The other thing is that the particular ransomware is targeted. From what I've researched, this group is targeting larger institutions for that ransomware, not necessarily going after individuals.
I think I heard that there are some hospitals and things like that, or organizations that had not yet patched their systems after the initial blast that went through, particularly through Russia and Eastern Europe. And if you don't do that, you're asking to get hit.
Yeah. It's terribly, I mean, and Gary has spoken many times on this, and it makes good sense. You should always keep your operating systems patched. And up to date, because generally speaking, the makers of operating systems are taking care of those types of situations and providing the appropriate measures to fill in the holes, as they say, whenever they get developed. So keeping it patched up on a regular basis is the best thing to do.
And that's true for individuals, but you have to remember there's a lot of organizations out there and that basically they had an IT department, and the IT department a few years ago said, well, don't patch, let's wait 15 days to see if there's any damage and whatever. And some people cut back on their IT department and things get dropped and forgotten about and things stop being patched. I mean, that's always a possibility too, and you could certainly see that over in, I don't want to call Russia a third world country, but you know, maybe they're not running the most legal software over there.
You know, a lot of the things that happen because, once again, the old adage, you get what you pay for.
Right.
If you don't pay for adequate IT support, you're going to end up paying for it on the other side when you get compromised.
You know, I got to wonder if some of these sites are, if you ran Ubuntu or Linux Mint, or a Mac, would you become infected with ransomware?
Because apparently, the last time around, they were. Yes, the last one went out. What was it called?
Well, the research that I did on this one in particular so far is only written for the Windows platform. It is not written for any of the other platforms that I found out. Now, there may be some other information, but I checked a number of sources, and so far, it's been strictly a Windows-based type situation.
Hmm. So
which would be obvious because, after all, if they're going to collect ransom, they want to get it from the biggest audience they can get to, and obviously a Windows audience is much larger than any of the other platforms.
Well, bottom line is apparently if you've kept your updates with Microsoft, you're going to be safe from what I've been reading.
It'll help you to be safe. I don't know if it's necessarily a do-all, kill-all yet.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to start talking about some of the things we've helped you to solve this week.
Now back to the Internet Advisor. Once again, your hosts, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Rudell.
Welcome to hour number two of the Internet Advisor, where we tackle sometimes some of your questions. And we'd like, by the way, to make that our main diet. And the only way that we can get those questions is if you'll go to internetadvisor.net. Go to the Contact Us tab at the top of the page, click it there, and send us an email with your concerns about what's happening to your laptop or printer or modem or whatever the device may be that you are working with and having problems with, and we will work on it during the week and give you some solutions when you tune into the program here on the weekend. Gary Baker, who is part of our crew here, you have a little different perspective on the Bad Rabbit ransomware infection that started in Europe during this past week.
Well, yeah, it primarily targeted European sites. And what it is it's a malicious code injected through JavaScript in non-patched systems. And then it hops to other systems. Basically, when you go to a particular site that's been corrupted, then you can download malicious code onto your system. The interesting part, I think, is that it's having far less results than what Petya did back in June. If you remember, that was just after WannaCry was the first big one to hit so many sites, and then Petya came shortly thereafter. About 67% of the code is the same. So either it's a copycat or it's the same people that unleashed Petya here in the Western world, in the Western hemisphere, is now going after mostly Eastern European sites, Turkey, the Ukraine, Bulgaria, and obviously Russia. The interesting part, I think, and it's either because of one of two things, either because the rest of the world saw what was happening here and they learned and they patched systems, or a lot of people have said, well, you know, Russia, while they don't do other things as well as we do, they do a very good job of keeping their systems patched. You know, maybe not quite as innovative, but they're more process oriented in so many different ways. And there's fewer sites and there's fewer rogue sites out there, set up by just individuals. And, but for whatever reason, it's not having the same effect, which is good.
Yeah.
You know, it's not affecting as many sites as I think the bad guys wanted to affect.
You know what, Gary?
So we'll see what happens. We'll see if it spreads beyond Eastern European websites, but that's where it's really hopping around right now.
A few other web pages and sites that I was reading on was speculating, and this is purely speculation, but they were saying the reason why it didn't get so rampant in Russia was because, generally speaking, the people who create these things don't necessarily pollute their own backyard. And second of all, if they do a lot of that type of work, they generally know they need to have themselves well defended and well patched in that particular case.
I don't think bad guys are unless it's state-sponsored, and this may be, but I don't think so.
Well, I wasn't.
I think these guys are trying to make money.
Right.
And, you know, they go after Russia. They go after any site they think they can penetrate.
Well, they weren't saying.
So I don't know if it's. I don't know if they're trying not to hit Russia or not. You know, there was a lot of speculation.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not. But certainly they're trying hard. And it's indiscriminate once they unleash it. So,
yeah, right.
Although there's some evidence that maybe these are more targeted than what they were in the U.S. back in June, May and June. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of hard to tell.
Mm-hmm. But
I think people have learned, right? I mean, we all have to learn to get our systems patched.
Yep.
That's what happened to Equifax and why they probably shouldn't exist as an organization anymore.
Yeah.
But that's just an editorial opinion. Sorry.
Now, if something else happened this week, Cal, you were talking about the iPhone. Is it the X or the 10?
It's the 10.
Yeah.
They use X because it's like, because it's OS 10 is what it is for the Mac, and so they use the Roman numeral X. It's the same for the phone.
But everyone calls it OS X.
Yeah, I know.
They just wanted to skip 9 like Windows did.
Yeah.
they caught a bad habit from Microsoft, and it just went nuts. But the iPhone 10 started selling this week, and they started shipping them with the ship date of 11/3 or November 3rd. And then just today, I noticed out on one of the websites, they've accelerated the ship date, so they're shipping them even earlier.
Oh.
Well, earlier this week is when they went on sale. You could actually do a pre-order for an iPhone 10. And 15 minutes into the pre-orders, they were all sold out.
Good grief.
20 minutes into the pre-order time, wow, mysteriously they start showing up on eBay. And they're going anywhere from $1,500 to almost $3,000 for an iPhone 10.
Unlocked. Oh, my word.
Now, the iPhone 10 is the one that's shaped like a shoe, or it's as big as a shoe?
It's a really big shoe.
Oh, okay.
No, it's the one that does the face recognition for unlocking the phone, and it's the most innovative of the two models that they put out or announced back in September. It was the 8, and it was the 10, and once again, Microsoft has got them puzzled again. We lost the 9. I don't know where it went. But that phone is out, and it is, there are people who, for some reason or another, just don't have enough patience to wait until the phone comes out to buy it at a normal price, and they will buy it off of eBay for these inflated amounts. In addition to that, Best Buy has gotten in on the game as well, and they have inflated their price for the iPhone by $100. So instead of $999, it's $1099. And they said they did that for the convenience of their customers and be able to provide them for what they want, which is not making much sense to me, other than there's an opportunity to make a little extra money, and we're not going to gouge them, but we're going to try and see what we can pick up.
And the demand is real high. Let's go for those dollars out there. I can't.
The holiday season's coming up, so it's all that sort of stuff.
So people will have these things in their hands by middle of November?
Is that? Yes.
So
if not, they should be getting them sometime, about the middle of November they should have them in their hands.
Something to give thanks for Thanksgiving, huh?
Yeah, wouldn't it be nice just to stuff a turkey with iPhones? It'd be the most expensive turkey you ever had.
You've often said, and I guess I have to agree, that buying the first version of something that has got some pretty heavy changes in it is a little dangerous. That's why I stayed away from iPhone 8 when I went up. I was stuck with this iPhone 7 Plus.
Well, I personally am a little bit skittish. I like to be on the leading edge, but not on the bleeding edge. And who knows? It may come out, and they may have, very few things going wrong with it, and it may just be a wonderful success. $1,000, I'm going to wait.
Now, I guess one of the burning questions is whether Mr. Rudell will ever buy an iPhone.
No. But I'm wondering how many Microsoft patches will be released in that first month between Thanksgiving and Christmas,
Microsoft?
Apple.
No, Apple patches. Yeah,
Apple patches.
For the Apple, the iOS patches.
Well, it's kind of interesting that you say that, but it's going to be running the same iOS that we're currently running right now. Mm-hmm. However, there are different hardware differences with the 10 as opposed to the 8 and the 7 and the 6.
Oh, there's going to be a battery patch, you know that, and then there's going to be a facial recognition patch, and they'll call it 10.2 and 10.2.1. And
oh, yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, you know, that comes with it. I mean, yeah. For some reason or another,
that's fine.
It just seems to work that way, because when they released iPhone 11 OS, I mean, within 3 weeks, we had three patches for them. They weren't huge, but there were three patches for them because there were little quirks that they found out that were affecting specifically, as you said, the iPhone 8, not necessarily the 7 or the 6, which they're still selling. And so, therefore, they had to do things to try and fix those types of situations.
So, Gary, when is your next iPhone contract up?
Well, I'll tell you what, it's been up for a while. I'm still on a 6 Plus and enjoying that. So I don't think I need to go anymore until, to buy another phone. And especially something with Face ID. I'm a little concerned, really. If I start using that, I'm just worried that an emoji will pop up with a little sad face. Oh boy.
In all seriousness, Gary, do you generally cycle every other generation of the phone, do you just use a phone until it just seems to be not doing the job you want it to do?
It's more of the latter, really. I'm happy with my 6 Plus. It's doing everything I want it to do. I know I could get water resistance in the 7. I know 8 is going to be a little bit better. Other than the Face ID, I think I'm going to like the 10, but I'm going to wait till they start selling at a discount rather than selling at a premium.
Yeah, yeah.
And I would think that water resistance would be a big caller for you now that you're doing what you do.
Well, he does the old Ziploc trick.
The Ziploc trick?
Yeah, Ziploc. Just stick your phone in a Ziploc.
Well, no, you're let's see, how many meters deep can you go with these 8, is it? Isn't it?
No, the 7 actually has water resistance, and you can go to a certain depth, but that depth that you can go with it, I'll never know if it's water resistant because I won't go down that deep.
I can tell you this, that my change for Ginny from a 6 Plus to a 7 Plus was motivated by two things. First of all, she spilled some water in a purse and there was water damage. And while the water damage could be fixed, the problem was that the water damage was there. And so we moved to the 7 Plus. And the other thing was that there is a much better performance, a faster chip in that 7 Plus. It performs much faster.
I moved from an iPhone 6 to a 6, I mean, to a 7. And just from a 6 to a 7, the speed was that much better. I can imagine that from the 6 to the to an 8 or to a 9. I mean, 8 to a 10, it's just going to be that much better. It helps when it's a lot more speedier. You're able to do things with your device better when you have a faster processor.
All right, we're going to come back in just a minute and continue our chat here about technology on the Internet Advisor. Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, and Cal Carson, along with Foster Brown, your co-host here in the studios. By the way, don't forget, you need to go to internetadvisor.net and put that email in there with your question, and we'll roll up our sleeves and tackle the problem, no matter where you're listening to us from, whether it's on the Michigan Talk Network or through our home station at WJR or on our podcast at podcastdetroit.com. We'd love to hear from you. Give us an email.
Back to the Internet Advisor. Once again, your hosts, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Riddell.
Thank you for joining us once again for the second hour of the Internet Advisor. Those of you who are enjoying the program through podcast, good to have you with us. And for those of you in our affiliates who are able to join us for the second hour, it's good to have you there too. Just a reminder for you that the way that you can get your questions answered by our team of experts, Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, Cal Carson, and I come along. I carry the water for them behind this. We're here to answer your questions. So if you've got a question about your computer or about your phone or modem or whatever, printer, whatever it may be, please go to internetadvisor.net on the Contact Us button. You can leave us an email. Or if you go to our website for the show notes, you will find at the very bottom of the page, there's a little space there where you can leave a comment and a question as well. So we look forward to the opportunity to help you folks.
You know, last segment, we were talking quite a bit about Apple. And, you know, it got me thinking. I thought I read something earlier in the week about Microsoft is going to discontinue the Kinects, which basically is their video device that they were bundling.
K-I-N-E.
K-I-N-E-X.
No, wasn't it C-O-N-N-T-E-X?
No, it's K-I-N-E-C-T. And basically, yeah. Microsoft bundled it with their Xbox One. It was available for their other Xboxes, and they tried to incorporate it into games and dances, and it really never really took off. And what basically happened, the Microsoft Xbox One was getting its socks blown out of the water by Sony's PlayStation.
Uh-huh.
And so what Microsoft did is and probably hopefully not too late, is they removed the Kinect from the Xbox One because it was bundled in there,
mm-hmm.
cut $100 off the price of it, and they doubled their sales in a month of Xbox Ones.
Wow.
So it's pretty much the Kinect is gone because you could buy them online for $50.
Was there anybody writing any software for
Only
the Kinect?
Hackers were doing it. So hackers were writing all sorts of code to run on your computer to use it for other things like motion controlled, for turning on your lights and stuff like that.
Right.
So not hacker, you know, good hackers.
Maybe they're kind of like open source people.
Yeah, there are a lot of, a lot of people writing code for that. It was a great idea, but to implement it in a game, the game developers just really could not embrace it except for a couple studio things.
Do I remember that it was a piece of software you had like a camera.
It was a two-lens camera.
Yeah.
Stereographic, so Microsoft could detect your motion and your distance.
I got you.
So that you could interact with the game and raise your arms over your head.
I got you.
Swing your arms. So in some games, you could actually use your body movements to control the characters.
So it's like a wireless Wii.
Yeah.
Because with the Wii, you have to hold the transmitter in your hand.
Correct.
And you shake it around and
right,
it got received by the receiver. But in this particular case, you didn't have anything to hold in your hand. You shook yourself around.
When that initially came out, I thought, wow, this is going to be the cat's meow. This is going to be
just never caught on in the gaming environment.
Did.
A lot of people came up with some great ideas for to use around your house, you know.
I'm going to be really, really cruel. And when I saw it come out and I was comparing it to the Wii, and that sort of thing, the only thing that popped in my mind was a one word, and that was Zune. Just knew it was going that direction.
It's interesting that both Microsoft and Google have had hardware come out that just went nowhere.
I forget, like the Google Glass.
Google Glass, and what was the other thing for audio for Google? It was like a ball that had all sorts of...
disco lights? What?
No.
I actually don't remember.
You could plug things. Anyway, it died within a week of being out there, and you thought, wow, this is Google. I mean, they should have tested this out.
They're better at selling ads or collecting ad revenue than they are.
They certainly are.
But Google Maps is wonderful, you know. And
their
Android phones are excellent.
Speaking of Android phones, you had an adventure this week with your phone.
I did. This is the first time I've lost my own personal Android Samsung Galaxy S7. And I was taking the dog for a walk, got a little rambunctious. I just got off the phone with you, right?
Because
you said you were going to call me, holstered it, took the dog to the car. Lo and behold, got home, is like, oh no, where it's at. So iPhones, you have the ability to say, what is it?
Find my phone.
Right.
Android, you can log into any PC and do the same thing. You log into your Google Gmail account and you say, locate my phone.
Ah.
I did that, locate my phone, and it showed me it was right in the parking lot of the dog park I was in. So I drove back there, and unfortunately, the Ranger Rick or Ranger Rochelle wasn't there at the time. And I wrote him a little note, slipped it under the door, and I'll see if they're open.
But people should know who have Android phones that you've got that ability to to locate your phone.
Right. So when you're using an Android phone, one of the things you do, you register, you type, you create a Gmail account.
Right. Right.
And that Gmail account is then you should associate it with your phone. It does it automatically,
right.
I believe.
I think it does.
But
yeah.
And my son actually lost his phone a little while ago, and we were able to find out that it was in the mall in Grand Rapids, and you can actually see it every few minutes moving around in the mall, so we knew someone had it, you know.
Uh-oh.
Oh, well.
Hey, you know, that brings up a magic question. Does that Google application on a computer have the same feature that Find My Phone have?
I can erase it. Yeah.
Oh, you can erase it?
Yes, you can erase it.
Oh, how cool.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So your son, could erase the content that was
right, because he was concerned. He did not have a screen. Did he have a screen lock? He did not have a screen lock at the time with a PIN, and he had Gmail, GPay, or Google Pay.
Ouch.
On there. So, but then... the phone never came back online because he said it was low on battery anyway. So he lucked out, really. So you better, he has a PIN on his screen now, you know, for screen lock.
Very important. So okay. Yeah. In case you
I'm hoping to pick up mine the next day or so. So that's, you know, it is what it is. I mean, I didn't yell at anyone when they lost their phone. And to me, it's just like, you know, it happens.
I wonder how far into the water Gary's phone would have to sink before he couldn't find it, would find my iPhone again.
I'll tell you what, I'll find it with a mask.
Oh, yeah, you'd be checking for particles.
If it goes in the water, I go straight after it.
Well, you have which one of the iPhones you have, Gary?
Six.
You
have
the 6 Plus.
Yeah. Yeah, and unfortunately, that doesn't have much protection against moisture, pardon me.
Yeah.
But
it doesn't float either.
Now, do you keep it in some sort of water-resistant case?
No. I've never used a case.
It
doesn't slide in my pocket as easily with a case on it.
That's right. How are you going to slide that in your skivvies? In your bathing suit. Gary's wearing a bathing suit all the time.
Yeah, it's a Speedo.
Don't go there.
I got to tell you, the size...
Yeah, luckily I don't have a Speedo.
Oh, great. So now he's out there skinny dipping. But anyway, for the size of that iPhone Plus, though, it's about the size of a surfboard anyway. If you can make it float, you'd be in good shape.
Guys, I saw something. This kind of blew my mind. An article was about Microsoft... is a rumored Andromeda foldable mobile device online. This is a rumor that appeared this last week. It says, let's see, if Microsoft builds another Windows-powered mobile device, will anyone care?
Right.
It all ultimately comes down to the apps. And boy, isn't that true? And services it runs, and whether users find them compelling. Rumors about Microsoft possibly building a new foldable mobile device have been circulating for months. The company's filing for a patent on a hingeable courier-like design earlier this year added fuel to the fire. And this week, the rumors flared again with the claim that the coming device will be heavily focused on digital ink and pen. And they show an example of something that looks like about the size of an iPhone 5 or 6, not the Plus,
A hingeable device. Who was that company that had the hingeable Palm Pilot? It was Curiosia or something like that? Basically, it was two-screen Palm Pilot. Curiosia? Remember, it was a Palm phone, Palm clone, and it was hingeable. And that was actually very popular for a while. But, one thing Microsoft does have going for them is with the rollout of Windows 10, their App Store or Microsoft Play Store is a lot bigger. Remember when they rolled out last generation phones?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You couldn't find an app out there to pick your nose.
Well, what was terrible was...
Sorry.
Yeah, sorry.
I didn't know apps could do that.
Only Rudell could come up with these such lines of wit.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, I don't know where he gets them from, and I'm not going to speculate. But
you
they're
can
good.
Pick your friends. You they're can good. Pick. Yeah, never mind.
You know. I think the biggest problem,
but
though,
you can't pick your relatives. Right?
There you go.
the biggest problem is for all these companies, I think, Microsoft, for Google, and maybe even for Apple for all it's worth, is that unless you come up with something that is compelling, that people just got to have. Like, the only reason why the iPhone was so successful is because it had a touch interface to it, and it was all compact. I mean, phones were out before. Smartphones were out.
It was a beautiful device.
Right? But it had the right combination of everything that people wanted.
Yeah, right.
And when you come to the market late, it like with phones, like Microsoft did, if you're going to come there, you got to bring something that everyone has to turn their head and go like, whoa.
But which is what Apple did. Apple wasn't the first one to come to the market.
True.
With the touchscreens, et cetera, because I think Palm Pilot, if I'm not wrong, had it.
But it was with a stylus.
Exactly, exactly. My point is that Apple came in with a much better execution of those principles.
Yeah, you got to bring something that folks are going to go, whoa. That's different.
Well, I got to say, if they come up with this foldable Microsoft portable device, looks pretty cool.
But what are you going to do with it? What, just because it folds doesn't...
The split screen.
It's not the game changer.
Well, the split screen is they've got a program running on both sides. Okay, different programs running on both sides.
Well, the Nintendo DS was like that. It had its screen at the top and the keyboard at the bottom.
I don't know if this will sell, but I'm just saying it.
No, that's a good rumor.
That's like if you look at look at the current, whether it's an iPhone or an Android right now, and look at that and say to yourself, do I need a split screen on it to do what I want to do? And if the answer is not yes.
On occasion.
If I can run two different apps in two different windows on a mobile device, that'd be great.
It would be for me, too. For instance, I'm looking for a password or something like that.
Small that screen's going to look when you cut the already small screen in half.
No, they're going to make it'll probably be the same size as our existing phone.
That's exactly
twice the screen real estate.
Okay, well, maybe so.
Sliced in half.
And if it ran Android operating system, it'd be a winner. I might even buy it.
Yep. All right, we're going to take a quick break and wrap things up in just a minute when we come back with the Internet Advisor. Glad that you decided to join us for this part of the program.
Now back to the Internet Advisor. Once again, your hosts, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Rudell.
Thank you very much for inviting us along for the ride here on our podcast. On behalf of Gary Baker, Ed Rudell, Cal Carson, and myself, Foster Brown, thank you. We really appreciate it when you join us for this program. And by the way, you can find our episodes a number of different places. On iTunes, you can subscribe to our podcast, The Internet Advisor. And then you can also find us at podcastdetroit.com. which is a podcast network here in the Detroit area. And if you go to internetadvisor.net, of course, you can download the podcast each week.
My God, and usually so post many that on places Sunday nights. You can go to get it. That's just wonderful.
Yep. Thank you so much, Ed, for doing a great job of engineering the program this week.
Yay.
Hey, you know, for most people hearing this, or I should say, for a lot of people hearing this, Halloween will have already passed because it's a podcast. People can listen to it whenever they want to. Halloween is the ninth, or was, I should say, perhaps, the ninth anniversary of the launch of Bitcoin. Am I right on that, Mr. Baker?
Certainly, and boy, is that scary. You know, it's funny because we still confuse what it is with the underlying technology, blockchain, which is just a distributed ledger that we're going to use for all sorts of transactions. That makes a whole lot of sense. Bitcoin is just the cryptocurrency that runs over a blockchain, one of many, many blockchains. Interesting, and you saw in a couple emails that I sent, there's a new one out, a new cryptocurrency. There's lots of them out. There's only a couple that have gained any traction. This one is called Bitcoin, and it's coming out on the ninth anniversary of Bitcoin. And they're guaranteeing 6.2% annual interest for anybody that owns DeCoin, D-E coin.
Well, that, you know, that almost sounds piddly compared to how much interest people were getting on their Bitcoins. But
well,
just to guarantee that
the appreciation, they don't get to keep it. If the currency goes back down, then they lose all of that.
Well, that's true. Yeah. But so how can they
it's
guarantee
just the appreciation of the price? And you know, it's if somebody said, you know what, we're just not going to, or if there's a breach and all of a sudden they can't figure out who owns which DeCoin, this could all evaporate. It's not backed by the full faith and credit of the U.S. government or for any matter, any government for that matter. So the people that are guaranteeing this aren't identified.
Yeah.
You can't go back and say, all right, I want my 6.2%, hand it over to me, I'm going to change it into something else. The U.S. dollar, you know, U.S. greenbacks.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's just interesting. It just got to be careful. The web is still, and especially in this area, still the wild, wild west.
Well, and if I remember,
even scam goes.
And if I remember right, 6 years ago or so, Bitcoin had a number of servers that went all magically just disappeared, and people lost hundreds of thousands of Bitcoins, and they didn't know what happened to them, and were they going to resurface? You know, and.
Yeah.
You know,
easy
it is
come,
the wild.
Easy go.
Yeah, it is the wild west.
Explain to me, guys. If somebody try to explain to me, how do these things gain traction? How do you? How do they gain value, Gary? Can you explain that, or anybody else?
Well, why did people buy snake oil from salesmen in the West?
Because it was supposedly supposed to provide them with a service or a healing property,
cure of some kind. Yeah.
Yeah, somebody sold them some snake oil, right?
Right.
And I don't know how many times the Brooklyn Bridge has been sold.
Well,
you know, it's a matter of people want to see something different, so they want to believe.
Ah.
Okay, right? So for the layman out there, Gary, can you explain what the heck a crypto coin is?
Somebody says, here's a crypto coin. It's a piece of code, and we're going to put out a ledger. It's going to be using blockchain, so it's going to go to all these different servers, and we're going to say you own six crypto coins, six DeCoins in the case of we're talking about this new one, and people assign a value to it. It's very similar to assigning a value to the old barter clubs, right? I mean, it's a much more sophisticated way of exchanging value, but a Bitcoin is just a unit of value that somebody values. If I said, Cal, can you help me with my computer? And you say, yes, I'll take six Bitcoins for it. I can roughly equate that into, I would have paid you a couple hundred bucks to help me with this. So, you know, that's the value of six Bitcoins.
Okay.
And then somebody else says, I'm not so sure about that. I'm going to exchange my value. I'm going to say it's going to be 15 Bitcoins for something else.
Mm.
And it starts to level out and people start to see the relative value. But that's how it happens. It's very similar to the old barter clubs.
Interesting.
Boy, it gives me a headache trying to keep up with all of that.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
You won't find me owning any.
Yeah.
Well, I wish I would have owned some about 8 years ago when it was.
Well, then what would you do with them? Would somebody give you actually cash for it?
Well, I think you can exchange it for cash now.
Well, some people will do that.
Yeah.
At what discount?
Yeah, at what discount? But when it's worth $5,500 for one Bitcoin right now, and if I could have got it for $20,
yeah,
that would have been great. I ran into an old colleague.
And you could have bought some swamp land someplace, and they dredged next to it, and all of a sudden made it, you know, into a buildable lot.
Isn't Amazon taking Bitcoin?
I don't know.
Yeah, I would guess that part of the way the value increases is who's going to accept it as payment,
right? And because it sort of gives the illusion of legitimacy,
or the reality of legitimacy in the sense of, for instance, if Amazon says, "Okay, I'll take your 5 bitcoins for a microphone or a headset or whatever.
Yeah, well, I could buy a house for 5 bitcoins.
Well, okay, then, yeah, exactly. I'll take, whatever it is. But, I mean, it is.
Yeah, 1/1,000th.
What you were saying before, Gary, is it assigns the value based on what it says those things are worth,
exactly.
How many of them that's worth.
That's interesting.
Well,
as a follow-up to last week. I'm just going to completely change the subject because none of us are really experts on bitcoins, and I hope to get someone in here soon. Cal, you had someone that you were working with last week that had a failed hard drive that you were letting it using your Mac utility to try to recover. Whatever happened with that?
Well, good news for that person. I've been able to so far recover over 50% of the data that was on that hard drive. And I've been able to pull it back for them, and they've been very, very happy because of that 50% data, probably 80% of that were old family pictures.
No, those
you know,
are key.
When the kid was like 3 yep. all the way up until they got out of high school, and they had no backup for it until now. And I was able to recover some of that and pull it off, and I'm still pulling more of it off. I still got another maybe 15 gig to go through. But so far, it's been going pretty good. It's a hard, arduous task.
When you pull that material off, pictures.
Yes.
Or documents. But in this case, pictures very often. Where do you put them? Where do you store them? Do you store them on a hard drive, a physical hard drive, or do you put them in the cloud?
The hard drive, you mean when I pull them off to give to the end user?
Yeah.
Okay, I hook the damaged drive up to my Mac, and then I use a program and extract them and save them onto the hard drive on my Mac itself,
okay.
The internal.
Okay.
And then I transfer it from the internal hard drive to a brand new hard drive, and then take that hard drive and move that one over to the new computer and put them on there.
Okay. Would another solution be, for instance, to take, use a Google account and or Dropbox or Gary, what is the one that Microsoft has? It's called
OneDrive.
OneDrive, and use OneDrive to store these things.
Oh yeah. Well, now they're actually storing them in two places now. After I put it all onto their new computer, I also got them an external hard drive,
mm-hmm.
and they hooked that up to it. It has a backup program on it that runs once a month at the end of the month, and it pulls everything that's changed off that computer. So now it's doing a full backup right now because everything is new on the computer. And then as things change, it'll pull only those things off. In addition to that, they also have an account with iCloud that they're pushing things up there too.
Okay. That's the other thing too. So you've got both the hardware solution and then also the cloud-based solution. Guys, another great program is in the books. Folks, don't forget that we are standing by to answer your questions all week long. All you got to do is go to internetadvisor.net and use any of those means that I talked to before about getting in touch with us, hitting the contact us button, and sending us an email with your questions. We'll get back to you as soon as we can. Thanks so much for being with us, guys. Ed, great job engineering. Cal, thank you for being here. And Mr. Gary, thank you so much for being with us. Everyone,
always
have
a pleasure.
Great week, and we'll see you back here on the Internet Advisor next week.